rocking with the voice of town view. We put our spin on trending topics and school news. Thought provoking, insightful, we speak the truth. We do it for all ages, not just for the youth. Listen close, you might learn something. Or laugh so hard, you split your side of something. Live stream a podcast. Whenever you tune in, it's sure to be a blast. Let's be honest, you don't want to miss that. Content so real, you're going to want to run it back. We keep you entertained while making an impact. Want foreign announcements? Well, this is not that. Sports, pop, culture, political. Whatever you like, we got you covered, bro. It's a movement more than just a show. It's KSBM Radio.
Broadcasting live from Marvin E. Robinson School of Business and Management, Dallas, Texas.
My radio station.
We are KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview. I'm Cammie, your host, and joined today by my co-hosts are...
Chewy.
Jojo.
Art Lover.
And today, we're thrilled to introduce a remarkable guest. We are privileged to have Dr. Nancy Bernardino, an extraordinary leader in the field of education, joining us. As the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Transformation and Innovation in Dallas ISD, Dr. Bernardino has spearheaded groundbreaking initiatives that have reshaped education. Her journey includes notable roles such as Executive Director and Principal, where she achieved remarkable milestones, including being recognized as Dallas ISD Principal of the Year and receiving the Master Principal designation. Dr. Bernardino has been a trailblazer throughout her career, leading with vision, passion, and an unwavering commitment to student success. Before we begin, is there anything you would like to share with us?
No, I'm just really excited to be here. I think I've always been in awe of Townview and especially this school, so I'm just really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. All right. To start off the interview, can you share with us your upbringing and how it played a big part in your overall career?
Yes, of course. So I was born in a rancho called Santo Domingo in Guanajuato, Mexico. And my parents actually brought me here to Dallas when I was one. So I was raised in Dallas, lived in East Dallas all of my life. Until now. Now I live in Pleasant Grove. But in my upbringing, I went to Dallas ISD schools, Lipscomb Elementary, O.M. Roberts, Long Middle School, and then I had an opportunity to apply to a private school through the East Dallas Boys and Girls Club. And so I ended up at the Hockaday School, which is an all-girls school here in Dallas. And that's where I think for me was really changed my trajectory, because it really gave me a view at the difference in education and public versus a private, and then what can be possible in both. I really attribute Dallas ISD gave me a really strong foundation, and that's part of the reason why I was able to earn a scholarship. I went on from Hockaday, I went on to Southern Methodist University, and actually my degree from SMU was in public affairs and corporate communication. So when I started a career, I was doing a lot of marketing, special events planning, and I did that for a while actually working at SMU. But it wasn't fulfilling, right? You get to that point where you're just going to work every day and you're like, okay, what impact am I making here? I was planning a lot of great events. People were having fun. But one of the things that I noticed when I was at SMU as a student, I was really involved in organizations. And one of the things I noticed working there and being a sponsor to student organizations was that a lot of the kids that I was working with were struggling with school. They were coming in to, they'd made it into SMU, but then were struggling taking remedial courses, which was putting them behind. So even though education was never part of my original plan, it ended becoming really, I think, my vision and my mission, really. And now I think I see it as my calling. So I applied to Dallas ISD Alternative Certification Program, and I started as a second grade bilingual teacher in East Dallas at George W. Truett Elementary, then went on to become a middle school Spanish teacher at E.D. Walker, and worked as an academic coordinator, an associate principal, and then eventually became a principal. And so throughout all that, right, I grew up, I think I didn't realize it until I went to Hockaday that my family was poor, right? Because my whole life I had everything. I had love. My parents really provided what they could, and I really didn't want for anything. I have siblings. All of us were really focused in our academics. So we had parents who pushed us. They said, that's all we need you to worry about, being in school. I started working when I was 13 years old. I think Burger King was my first job, right? And learned a lot through that. And I knew growing up, it was always my mom and my dad didn't go past second grade. But for them, it was like, in this country, education is what will get you somewhere, right? They didn't understand college, but I went off to college, got my was the first in my family to get my bachelor's degree, then was also the first in my family to get my doctorate. And so for me, all of those journeys, I think I have share a lot of commonalities with the kids that we serve in Dallas ISD. You know, I take a lot of pride in that because I think that helps inform a lot of my decision making, because I think I see myself even in each one of you, right? I wish I had the confidence that you have right here, right, leading this podcast right now when I was your age. And it makes me so proud to see everything that our kids in Dallas ISD do and how much you all push yourselves. That's my background and what led me here.
So you mentioned that it was working at SMU that made you want to get into education, but was there anything before that maybe gave you a little inkling like, oh, maybe I could do this in the future, or was it just never in the plan?
Yeah, no, honestly, it wasn't. So when I got to SMU, my first plan, I was going to be a business major, and then I took my first business math class, and I said, nope, not going to be a business major, because that was hard, right? So I ended up just taking regular college math. And so from there, no, I mean, education was really, honestly, part of it, I think, is I didn't know. I didn't know really what majors were out there, what, even though a lot of my peers went to college, right, everybody from Hockaday ended up going to college, I didn't really have anybody guiding me and talking through, like, hey, what is it that you really love to do? So I just picked a major that I thought, okay, this sounds interesting to me. It looks like it can be fun. I'm already here, so let me go towards this. And so I think that's part of it. I think maybe if I had had some guidance or maybe individuals asking me, like, what are you really passionate about? I might have gone into education sooner. I had friends that did were in the education on the education track at SMU. It was never something while I was an undergrad that I thought about. It wasn't until I saw the impact it was having on a lot of kids that actually went through Dallas ISD and grew up in neighborhoods like mine. Some of them were my friends. I had friends who graduated from high school, from a Dallas ISD high school at the same time that I graduated from Hockaday, and it took them 6 years to finish a degree that took me 4 years to finish, right? And so that, I think, really impacted me and the decision to go into education.
With multiple degrees from Southern Methodist University, including a doctorate in education leadership, how has your academic journey influenced your approach to educational leadership within Dallas ISD?
Yeah, so one of the benefits when I was at SMU working there, I had an opportunity to go to school while I was working, and I got a master's in liberal arts in alternative dispute resolution. That specific degree has helped me a lot, right? Because a lot of what I do now, it's working and supporting adults so that they in turn can support kids. And so I think that skill set from that degree has allowed me to engage in conversations with adults and I think families alike too. A lot of what I have to do is do a lot of problem solving. As issues come up, how can we talk through things? And so that helped. When I started teaching in the alternative certification program, I had a principal who hired me who said, hey, I think you really would be a really great administrator. You should start working on your master's in education administration. So I ended up applying to A&M Commerce and did my master's in education administration from there. And my goal was always, before I was 35, I was going to get a doctorate. And that, for me, was more about, I knew there's 1% of people with doctorates that are Latinas. And for me, it was really important that I earned my doctorate so that I could show other young Latinas, hey, this is something that we can do. And with doctoral studies, what we have to do is do research studies, right? And you get to pick what you research. And part of what I found is there's not a lot of research on Latinos in general because there's not enough of us getting doctorates. And typically when you're studying, when you're getting your doctorate, you want to study something that really interests you, that you connect to. And so if there's not enough of us getting them, that there's not a lot of research out there. So that's what drove me to get my doctorate. And that, again, it goes back to impacting all the decisions I make. The majority of students that we serve in Dallas are Latinos, emerging bilinguals, are economically disadvantaged, right? So there's connections that I think I have with all of those groups that help inform a lot of the decisions I make. I think I'm able to really, I don't have to put myself in their shoes because I was in their shoes, right? And so that helps drive a lot of the decisions I make. And as we're leading and creating opportunities and access for our students, I always keep that in the back of my mind to make sure that every decision we make is in the best interest of kids and providing opportunities for students.
So to reflect back on your early education career, during your time at John Quincy Adams Elementary School as a principal, what strategies did you implement to achieve the highest designations awarded by the state?
Yeah, so that was my first principalship, right? And I think first principalships are always a little bit rocky, but it was a lot of fun. I think I had an opportunity to work for a really great principal when I was at Long Middle School as an associate principal, Danielle Petters. And so she really prepared me for that principalship. And one of the things that we did at Long under Danielle Petters' leadership was our primary job when you're an administrator is to support teachers, right? It's make sure that teachers, if they're struggling with something, we're helping them, that we're present in classrooms, coaching, really being good thought partners with them, and then more than anything, giving them the resources that they need so that they can provide great instruction to students. I think that was really our focus at John Quincy Adams. It was making sure teachers had what they needed, working to make sure we had a great teacher in front of every kid, because ultimately we know that teachers are the greatest impact on student performance. And so our focus was on really giving our teachers what they needed so that they could be their best when they showed up in front of our kids. We looked at, of course, student data, right, to make sure, hey, are we meeting the needs of every student? And so I was really proud, yeah, when we were able to earn all the distinctions that the state had available and even got a national recognition for the work that we were doing. And that was huge because for me, more than anything, being a school in Pleasant Grove, I grew up in East Dallas, right? I say now I live in Pleasant Grove. At the time, Pleasant Grove was a little bit scary for me. So when I got there, I was like, God, this is such a wonderful community. Such a wonderful community with families that just, they want just what my parents wanted, right? They want the best for their kids. So the second strategy we did was we invited the parents to come in. I mean, parents were a big part of our success. They were present in our building. We had volunteers. You could go through our hallways and you would run into a parent who was volunteering, doing a variety of things. That's also, I think, where I started gaining some weight because mamas would bring me food all the time. And I love it, right? In our culture, that's how we express love is through food. And so I think it was a partnership with families, but then also supporting our teachers that led us to that success.
Still talking towards your Dallas ISD experience, as Dallas ISD Principal of the Year in 2019, what initiatives or changes did you implement that you believe contributed to this big recognition?
Yeah, so I think in 2019, it really came down to the launch of Solar Prep for Girls, right? So we launched the Solar Prep in 2016, and that was while I was principal at John Quincy Adams, put a team together, and together we pitched the idea of this all-girls school. And a lot of that came from my experience at Hockaday. So I think it's told you all, for me, going into Hockaday, that changed my life, mainly because it gave me confidence. It showed me that my voice mattered, right? You're surrounded by girls. Every girl was really valued and voice mattered. I think when I went in there, I was super shy. I was like, do I speak up or not? And so there, that was really nurtured. And so I wanted to create a school within Dallas ISD that could do the same thing for girls. And it was important for me that it started at an early age. So that's why we pitched a pre-K through eighth grade school, because we knew the sooner our girls can start hearing positive messages, right? All over the world, we hear it, and everything that a girl cannot do. And so our goal was to make sure that we designed a school where a girl could hear every single day everything that she could do and do it in a positive way, and being able to do it in Dallas ISD and hiring really great and amazing teachers. I think that's what led to that award, right? I got the recognition, but it had a lot to do with the families that had faith in choosing Solar Prep for Girls, and then, of course, the teachers that carried out this vision that we had and really went with us on the journey. So I think I got the luxury, or I guess privilege, of getting awarded Principal of the Year, but I really do think that that was an award that was for our entire campus because of the work that we did.
Sticking with your accolades, what did it mean to you to be awarded Master Principal in 2018 and 2019, and how did it shape your ongoing commitment to high performance in student achievement and personal practice?
Yeah, so definitely one of, very proud, right, of been a Master Principal for 2 years. And again, that goes back to our teachers' focus and commitment to student academic achievement. A lot of the work, one of the goals that we had at Solar Girls and still have is that all of our girls will be able to leave in eighth grade and apply to the school of their choice, being a magnet school like Townview, or going back to their neighborhood high school and really be able to make an impact. And so we had a lot of focus. I mean, we looked at data. I think I've never looked at data. Well, probably now I look at data a lot more. But that time it was making sure that, are we meeting the needs of every girl so that they are able to, by the time they leave in eighth grade, be super successful. And I mean, and it's about supporting, again, our teachers, right? Being Master Principal is both academics, but it's also, does your staff feel supported? Do they feel like they have everything that they need to be successful? And in our school, we pushed our teachers to do so much. Like, they went above and beyond. So it was really important. I think anytime I interviewed a teacher, I said, I'm going to have super high expectations for you, but I'm always going to have that support for you. And as a principal, that's what I always strive to do, is make sure that my teachers felt supported, make sure they felt they had what they needed, and that I was at, just like we ask our teachers, right, in your instruction, we need to add value to every student. Wherever we get them, if they're a high academically proficient student, we're coming, what value are we adding? It was the same thing for me as a principal. What value am I adding to this educator's career, right? Because some of our teachers went on to become administrators or professors, whatever it is that their career path showed. So I think that had a lot to do focusing on academics, but then also on the culture. And then of course, you can't ever leave out the parental support. Was bringing in a lot of parental support to help help us carry out our vision. So I think that all is, again, I got the privilege of being named Master Principal, but it was really an effort by the whole school.
Moving on to educational leadership roles, in what ways did your previous roles, including being a principal and founding Solar Prep for Girls, prepare you for your current position as Associate Superintendent in Dallas ISD?
Yeah, so now, right, when I get to support 41 schools, and all the schools that I support in Region 5 are either magnet schools or transformation schools. Transformation schools are basically brand new startup schools, schools that didn't exist prior, and you had school leaders, so they're like Solar Prep for Girls. And then I also get to support some innovation schools. I have some traditional neighborhood schools like Young Men's Leadership Academy and Young Women's STEAM Academy that are neighborhood schools, but they are single gender. So I think having been a principal, one, designing a school, and then having been a principal of a transformation school helps me better support the principals in our region, because I've done the work that they do, right? I think our region is unique in that we have so many moving parts as far as academics, of course, is always first and foremost. We want to make sure all of our students are successful. But then we also focus a lot on that sense of belonging and making sure, and I think our schools, all 41 of our schools really thrive at that, and creating environments where our kids feel safe and loved and nurtured. And then the other piece is also connecting with the community partnerships and parents. And I think because I've done the work, that allows me to better support the campuses that I have. And then the other part of my job, right, is the Office of Transformation and Innovation. And so in that component of my job, it's supporting the launch of new transformation schools, like things that brand new ideas that people are bringing forward, and supporting our neighborhood schools who are applying for funding. So this is a neighborhood school who says, now, our community really wants to become a science, technology, engineering, arts, and math campus. And so my team gets to help a neighborhood school do that and give opportunities to neighborhood schools in their community. So I think having led that work really puts me in a position where I can better support the work.
So to reflect back on your tenure as executive director, what were some key achievements and challenges you faced in supporting innovative schools such as Solar Prep for Girls?
Yeah, I think so as executive director, I supported all six single gender schools. So in Dallas ISD, we have three all girls and three all boys schools. I had a chance to support our five of our seven Montessori schools. And then I think the biggest achievement to date, when I was an executive director, was helping support the launch of Biomedical Preparatory at UT Southwestern, which is super unique partnership with UT Southwestern and Dallas ISD, where you have kids, like little kids, at UT Southwestern working in their simulation lab, getting to do things that some professionals don't get to do at all, or some you have to go to medical school to even experience that. So really proud of that. And that school has now become our school that gets the most applications every year. And then it was also helping support. And that's also, I want to name Dr. Roberto Gonzalez, who's the principal and founding principal of that school. Getting to work alongside him was really great. And because he's built a solid team, really strong foundation there. And then the other was launching Dallas Hybrid Preparatory, which was under the leadership of Dr. Olga Romero. And so Dallas Hybrid Preparatory is also a very unique first hybrid school in the state of Texas. And it really became a model and continues to be a model for hybrid education. In that school, you have kids who come to school on site 2 days a week, and then the other 3 days they're learning remotely. So that can be at home, that can be wherever it is that they choose to, right? And it creates a space and opportunity for kids who are just not ready to commit to 5 days a week being inside a school building. So I think those are the greatest achievement. Challenges, it's when you serve so many different models of schools, right? It's trying to meet the needs of all the principals that I served to make sure that they, again, had what they needed to be successful, and trying to, if we hired a first-year principal, coaching and supporting them so that they could be successful in their work. So while there were challenges, it was still fun work, because I think that's part of what I love about my job is I get to problem solve, be creative, and think through with people that are very like-minded. And have some creative solutions to things so that in the end, all of our kids can have great opportunities.
Moving on towards transitions and building relationships, can you elaborate on your role as Associate Superintendent for the Office of Transformation and Innovation in Dallas ISD and its responsibilities?
Yeah, so specifically with relationships, right, one of my responsibilities is building relationships with the greater Dallas community so that our schools can have access to specific partnerships. So I'll give you an example. Right before spring break, I met with an organization called OutTeach. And so OutTeach used to be Real School Gardens. And what they do is if you at your elementary schools ever had an outdoor classroom or outdoor garden, it's possible that they help support that. And so working with organizations like that, thinking through, okay, which of our schools may benefit from this? And for me, it was really cool because when I got to John Quincy Adams, that was one of my goals. Before I leave this school, we're going to have an outdoor classroom through this organization, and we were able to achieve that. So I've seen firsthand the benefits it has for both students and teachers. And so being able to connect our schools and give them access to partnerships like that, that's one of my responsibilities. In addition to, right, we launch these new transformation schools or give money to neighborhood schools so that they can innovate. And so then the work that my team has to do is supporting these schools and these leaders in continuing whatever model it is that they've chosen. Because we've made a commitment to families saying, hey, we're now a STEAM school, we're an all-girls school. And so families are expecting a certain product when they're choosing us, right? And so part of the work my office has to do is make sure, hey, is this school fulfilling the mission and vision that they're telling parents? And principals sometimes will ask, can we, get additional professional developments, sending them to conferences? Or it's also a matter of maybe even connecting people with other schools that are similar to them across the country, because that's a huge benefit. My office also, one of the things that we do, because Dallas ISD is leading the way with innovation, right? Like there's a lot of districts that look to us when they're thinking about reimagining their schools. So what my team does is coordinate visits, and we host a lot of districts. Like just this year, we've had districts from Canada come out. I think we're hosting A-Leaf pretty soon. We've hosted Austin. So we host all different districts from across Kansas City, Colorado. I could just go on and on with them, but that's a lot of what my team does, because we want to make sure that all of that knowledge doesn't just stay here with Dallas ISD, right? I think our mission is greater. We want to impact kids across the country.
So how do you ensure that the unique and innovative school models under your guidance align with the broader goals and standards of Dallas ISD?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're fortunate, and I think, you know, you all had a chance to meet her, right? We have an amazing leader, Dr. Elizalde, who, you know, her charge is we're providing excellence to all of our students through instruction. We're providing access to opportunities, because we know that a lot of the times our community, it's not an issue of can we do it, it's can you just give us a chance to even try it and do it. And so I think that's part of what our office is there to do. It's, we believe that every child has a right to their best fit school. So if, as communities come to us and say, hey, we really think that we need, let's say we have a demand, right, for another all-girls school. Like, we have this long wait list. We are really neat that we're trying. We have more families who are interested in it. Then my office's charge is, okay, can we launch a second one? Where does that need to be? What we're responding to the community. And that, I think that really speaks to that access to opportunities that we've been charged with. And, of course, in all of our schools, we know academic excellence comes first. We can do really cool stuff like, you know, do robotics and engineering, but if students are not performing at the levels that we need them to, then we've missed our mark. So it's always academic excellence, because our goal is to prepare all of our students, right? Just like you ought to prepare you to go off and compete with your peers. So whether you choose to go directly into a career, choose to go off to college, choose to go off to the military, it's helping you compete with your peers around the world. And so that's how we see and drive our office. It's, are we providing opportunities? Are we preparing our kids academically to compete with their peers around the world?
What initiatives or projects are you taking on in your current position to foster innovation and transformation within the schools you oversee?
Yeah, so I think right now, I think we actually just had a meeting yesterday with one of my executive directors, Nicole Bixby, and part of her work is designing what we call continuums, right? And these continuums, what they tell us is, as we go into a school, where is this school in their implementation of becoming a performing and visual arts school or becoming a STEAM school? Where are they in their Montessori implementation, right? And so it's, one, designing metrics that inform our principals to say, hey, we think you may benefit from such and such conference, such and such professional development, to be able to get from maybe a beginning implementation to full-on implementation. So our team is continuously, it's like progress monitoring, right? We're like continuous improvement, always going back. And that's a big part of being a creative. There's always new ideas. And so the process of constant reflection, okay, are we doing our best with this model? It's also about bringing new and innovative, not just technologies, but ideas to our schools. So I just had a team right before spring break. They went to South by Southwest for educators, right? And they attended these conferences. And so right now what they're doing is creating a calendar of professional development opportunities for schools. And that includes everything from AI to more project-based learning in schools. And so they're going to create these professional development options for our schools, and they will opt in, right? This is not something that we force, because we also know, being a creative, we can't push things on. People have to want to take it. And so it's giving them, hey, these are some options, resources for you. If you want them, we'll come and deliver them. We'll do them in a flip setting, you know, recorded video, and send them to you however you want to use them, principal. But that's part of what our team does to support the current implementation of our schools or our current models.
So going into collaborative leadership approach, how do you plan to further engage with the educators, administrators, and staff within the schools you oversee to enhance their success and growth professionally?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the think privileges I have, right? I get to work with amazing, amazing principals, and I think y'all get to interact with some of them, right? So Arnoldo Zuniga right here at TAG, right? And we know he's one of our top performing principals in all of Dallas ISD and has been for years. So getting to work with leaders like that who are just innovative, trying to meet their needs. And I think part of my work, so I've been in this job right since October. So I'm still, you know, I think I've learned a lot since October, but then it's also listening to leaders like that, right? About what do you need from my team to feel supported? Because that's, you know, we want to keep our principals and want to make sure that they feel supported. It's also working with first-year principals, and do they have what they need to stay in this profession? Because the principalship is hard, right? It's a job that often is a thankless job. Principals get a lot thrown at them, and I say all the time is you can't really judge a principal until you've sat in their seat, because it's a tough job that unless you've sat in that seat, you won't fully understand it. And so with that collaborative spirit is how do we bring in, I think right now we're looking at creating what we often call like a think tank, where we bring in principals and say, okay, principals, you tell us what your professional development should look like. What do you need when we have principals meeting? What are we missing? Where are we missing the mark? What can we add? Like, what's going well? Because we think we're doing some things well, right? We're giving some things that they need, but what are some things that you may want more of or less of? And so I think engaging them through that collaborative piece of bringing them in through that think tank, hearing their voices, and then as we design and plan for next year, being able to bring some of that into our plan for next year.
As you continue as associate superintendent in Dallas ISD, what strategies do you plan to implement to ensure your ongoing success and improvement of other schools under your supervision?
Yeah, so, you know, actually just this week I was talking to Dr. Lusk, who's our deputy superintendent, which if you haven't hosted him, he'd be a great person to host. And we were talking about different systems, right, that I need to put in place. Because, again, my job, right, I support 41 schools in Region 5, but then also I have the Office of Transformation and Innovation. So it's just creating systems that will allow me to kind of keep a pulse and monitor everything. And for me, it's about monitoring to make sure that the teams that I have are getting the support that they need. Because if you're a campus, right, on the campus side, those 41 schools is principals, are you getting what you need to be able to support your teachers so that they can then support our kids and their families? And then on the Office of Transformation, is my team getting what they need to, again, support the principals in those innovative schools, right, to, again, support teachers and students? So it all comes down to the trickle effect of creating tracking systems to make sure, hey, are our principals present in classrooms? Are they supporting teachers? What do our parent surveys tell us about how our schools are responding to parent and student needs? What do our climate surveys tell us about how staff feels in our schools? And then using all of that to figure out how to better support our schools so that we can have like a strong sense of belonging across all of the schools that we serve.
So looking towards the future, what do you have envisioned to continue the growth and success of the unique school models that are under you?
Yeah, so it's really exciting. We are actually right now in the works. We're going to launch a new K-12 International STEAM Academy in North Dallas. So if you all are familiar with where Valley View Mall used to stand, right? Mm-hmm. So it's right by there. It's an area called the International District. And so we're doing, this is a really cool partnership. We're doing it in partnership with Councilwoman Janie Schultz from City of Dallas, and also with Texas A&M Commerce. And so we have some really great partners that are fully, and also the North Dallas Chamber of Commerce is one of our partners there. And so it's launching this unique K-12 International STEAM School. So I get to do in this next year what I love to do most, which is like get creative and like part of the work. My biggest charge will be working with the executive director to identify a great principal to lead this, because we know that's a great indicator, right, of how the success of a school. And so identifying a great principal who wants to come in and really what I like to call is just design the school of their dreams. Because we've said, hey, it's a K-12 International STEAM Academy, but then it's really that leader that's going to come in and say, okay, for me, this is what that looks like. And of course, they're going to bring in all the voices of our partners, but they'll get to go around the country and look at different school models and design this. So that's that's our project that's coming up that for me is super exciting. And then second to that is then, of course, working with my team to refine our continuum and our support to help our innovation schools that we're funding. We're actually right now in the middle of interviewing schools that have applied. So when you when you're a neighborhood school and you apply to become an innovation school, that and you're awarded, that comes with some funding. So they get $350,000 in year one to implement their ideas. And so we're in the process of interviewing some campus teams who want to do that. And so part of the exciting work will be, once we approve them, right, is working again alongside them to be thought partners and get some ideas on how they're going to implement these ideas on their campuses.
What aspirations for the future of education within Dallas ISD, considering your role in driving innovation and transformation as associate superintendent? That's the question.
Okay. Will you clarify that for me again?
What are your aspirations for the future of education within Dallas ISD?
Yeah, I think my aspirations are, some of our schools, right, I think are still in, especially our transformation schools, are still in their beginning years. I think we know, like, our magnet schools are well-known around the country, right? When I go to Magnet Schools of America conference, like, we truly have some of the best magnet schools. And I think even national rankings show that, right? Within this building that we're sitting in right now, we have some very top schools. And so I think it's aspiration for our transformation schools to also be there. We have some schools that we've launched recently, and so they're just in their starting years. Some of them have only been around for 2 to 3 years. And so it's continuing, making sure that we're, again, delivering on the promise to parents, say, hey, this is the school that we launch, and that we are doing that well and with fidelity, so that as the school grows out, regardless of if there's a leader change or any changes in staff, that we're able to continue that vision and mission. And that's part of what my team has to do, right? So I think my aspiration is that we continue to provide these choices to families and students of best fit schools. And so we continue to listen to our community as they tell us, hey, I think we're good on this type of model. This is one that we'd really be interested in seeing, and we have this group of students that would really thrive in this type of setting. And so just continuing to keep our pulse to the ground, also our ear to the ground and a pulse on where innovation is taken. Because every day there's all sorts of innovation, right? And sometimes people think that's just through technology, but there's really so much more than that. And so always making sure that as a district, we continue being the leaders in innovation, because I think right now we are, and that we continue to invite people from around the country to visit us so that they can learn from us, so that we can have an impact beyond Dallas, right, and into other states, and making sure that more kids have access to best fit schools.
Could you discuss the impact of your involvement with professional organizations such as International Coalition of Girls Schools and the Association of Hispanic School Administrators on your leadership approach within Dallas ISD and beyond?
Yeah, so with the International Coalition of Girls Schools, right, that's a coalition of, I mean, girls schools from around the world. So I get to learn from leaders that are leading all girls schools in Australia, New Zealand, England, right, Europe, Asia, all over the place, and taking these ideas and thinking through how can we bring them back to always, what I like to say is level up, right? How are we going to get better? But then also is sharing the ideas that we do, because although all girls education has been around for many years, right, public all girls education has not been as popular. And so part of the work that we're adding to is contributing to this coalition and letting them know, hey, you do a lot of this research on private all-girls schools. Can we do some on public all-girls schools and the impact that they have? But it's also about contributing to that coalition based on everything that we've learned. I mean, we have one of the top all-girls schools here, right? Irma Lerma Rangel, Young Women's Preparatory School. Young Women's Leadership School. They're one of our top all-girls schools in the state, and even I would venture to say in the country, and being able to contribute to that. It goes back again to, like, being a part and putting us as part of the narrative and the research, and it allows Dallas ISD to do that. So And then with the Association of Hispanic School Administrators, our goal there is to support administrators that want to work in Hispanic-serving communities like Dallas ISD, to be able to help them better understand our community, right? Better understand the needs of our community, and give these individuals a support system, right? A networking opportunity. And so in that, I served as president of that organization for 4 years. And some of the work that we did was increase just the type of networking that we were doing in professional development. One of the things I think I'm most proud of is under my tenure as president, we launched the Latina Roundtable, where we were able to bring, it was an evening where we brought in and invited all of our Latina members, and we had a panel of speakers, and it was like so uplifting and so inspiring. And almost other professions spend a lot of time on this, and like affinity groups like this, and we hadn't quite done that. And that Latina Roundtable has now evolved into being like this phenomenal event now under the leadership of Principal Stephanie Amaya, who's the principal at Adamson, right? She's now the president of that organization. And they're continuing to just have events that allow administrators to connect and form, it's almost like a support group, because being a principal, or when you get into a certain position in administration, sometimes it can be lonely. And so you need to like interact with peers that have similar experiences as you to be able to help you contribute and add to your leadership.
Reflecting on your various accolades and recognitions, how do you plan to leverage your influence to further advance educational leadership, particularly for like underrepresented groups?
Yeah, so I think one of the things, you know, one of the benefits of earning my doctorate was that I also get to go back and teach. And so I'm actually, I've been a professor at SMU, where I've gotten to work with aspiring administrators and helping prepare them. And so as part of the work that I do with them is, right, again, helping them understand that the communities that they're going to serve and the communities that we serve are times in public school are underrepresented communities, right? So you as a principal, how can you make sure that you're bringing in opportunities for your students, that you're bringing in your families and engaging with them? So I think I get to do that through that, but then it's also through community involvement. So part of, again, the work I grew up in Dallas, right? It's been in Dallas all my life. A lot of my leadership experience as a, even in high schooler, was through LULAC. I was really involved in LULAC, and have always believed that I have just a civic responsibility to be really engaged. And so I try to be engaged in as many organizations as I can in Dallas. Right now I'm part of the City of Dallas Commission that's reviewing the City of Dallas Charter, right? And the charter is basically a document that governs how we as a city operate. And so getting to be a part of that and bringing in the lens of an educator into that. And so I think every organization or board that I serve on is bringing in the perspective of not just an educator, but then also a student having grown up in this community.
So moving a little more to your personal life, how do you balance being a mom of four kids and also making sure you're still doing what you need to do as a part of superintendent as Dallas ISD?
Yeah, so that's, I think, actually my biggest responsibility, right, is being a mom of four boys. And my boys are now older, right? My youngest is 17 and my oldest is 21. But they pretty much grew up with me in education because my oldest, Benjamin, I remember as a two-year-old, he was sitting in my portable as I was creating lesson plans, right, and getting ready for the next day. And anytime we had to prepare our school, you could have my, like on a Sunday, if I had to go into John Quincy Adams to work, there were my four boys with me running down the hallways. And of course, maybe you boys can relate. If you're a little boy and you get this whole school to yourself and you're running up and down the hallway, right, things you don't get to do when you're in school on a regular day. I think it's part of trying to bring them in I think they've kind of had to live being the son of a teacher, son of a principal. One of the things that I try to do to make sure, my boys are all play soccer. And so I spend a lot of time on the soccer fields. And one of the things that I try to do to make sure that I don't miss soccer games is I'm actually the manager of their soccer teams, right? Because if you're the manager, if you're not familiar with how those work, right? So a manager, you have to bring in the refs sometimes, or you have to make sure that all the kids have their uniforms, right? That everybody's there on time. And you have to check in the team with the referee. And so that forces me to be there, right? Because if I'm not there, maybe the team can't play. And so I think I've managed at least every one of my boys, their soccer team at some point. And then I've been just really a part of their soccer world, like right there on the sidelines. I try not to miss any soccer games or really anything that's an important milestone to them if I don't have to. And then, of course, I have my support system. One of the reasons I live in Pleasant Grove is because it's exactly 8 minutes from my mom's house. And so when my boys were growing up, those were my babysitters, my parents, right? I thought about moving out to the suburbs. Like, nope, that's too far from my parents. So I have really strong parent support system. And then, of course, my sisters and my brother are a really good support system as well. So, yeah.
Moving on to some fun questions. When you decided to go into the field of education, did you have any role models you looked up to?
Yeah, so I think when I first decided, one of the first things I did when I decided to go into education was I called my kindergarten teacher from Lipscomb Elementary, Yolanda Gonzalez, because Yolanda Gonzalez at that time was the principal of Lipscomb Elementary. So she had been my kindergarten teacher when I was there. And I said, Ms. Gonzalez, I'm going into education. I really need a mentor. Do you mind mentoring me? And she said, you know, of course, I'm always here for you, but I'd really like to connect you to a principal that I think would be a great mentor for you. And was the principal at the time of Truett Elementary, Eduardo Hernandez, who is now actually the superintendent in Edgewood ISD. And so I think connecting with them, having that mentor. But I think more than anything, when I was, again, in high school, I was involved in LULAC, and there was a man named Leonard Chaitis who supported the LULAC youth groups. And I was District 3 director for LULAC for several years. And so he was right there alongside me. And one of the things that he always pushed education on all of us. And the main thing he would always tell me, he's like, you know, you have to go to college. You have to get your degrees. But when you get your degrees, I don't ever want you to become an arrogant person where you look down on anyone. And so that, like, and he's passed away now, but that has always resonated with me. That and the fact that my mom, and I don't know if you all are Mexican, you know, obviously I'm Mexican, and your mom, Mexican moms have a way of humbling you really quick. So if you ever try to get, like, too big for your britches, like, no, I'm going to bring you back down to the ground. So I think for me, it's people like Leonard Chaitis, but then also, even though, again, my mom didn't have formal education, I think she gave me the best education possible, which was like having really good sense of morals and just this servant. My mom is super Catholic, and, you know, Catholic religion's about servant, being a servant leader too. And so I think that has really driven who I am as a leader.
So another really fun question we wanted to ask is, if you could imagine yourself being in a time machine and you would go back in time to your teenage self, what is one piece of advice you would give to yourself, and why?
Yeah, I think it would be just to, I mean, not to like steal it from Nike or anything, right? But just do it, right? Like, just don't be afraid. And then to just speak up. I think a lot of the times we're just afraid to take a leap. And it's at this point, like, when you're young, that's when you need to be a risk taker, right? Especially if you have a strong support system in your family. That's what I tell my boys. I mean, just yesterday, one of my boys was telling me about an idea of a business he wants. He's in college right now, but he's like still struggling with what major he wants to select. And so we talk a lot about that. And he's like, well, I think I'm going to launch this business for, you know, such and such idea. And talking through, I'm like, you know, just go for it. Right now, when you're young, that's a time to really try things before you make any major commitments. And I think I would just tell myself, just go for it. Don't hesitate.
Last one. Mm-hmm. If you were able to choose any career apart from the one you have right now or education, what would it be? It could be like a job, a career, or anything you would.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would probably be something to do with travel, because I love to travel. And that could be a flight attendant, or that could be maybe a pilot if I had better vision. but just something that would take me and give me the opportunity to just visit as many countries around the world, because I try to do that, and I just love, and I think what I love best about that is getting to know other cultures and getting to learn from them. When I was in college, I had a chance to live in Spain for 6 months, and it was amazing, right? And so that's my wish too. That's another thing I'll tell y'all. It's when, if you go to college, study abroad. If you don't go to college, make sure you're taking trips and traveling and getting to learn other cultures and other communities, because we learn a lot from experiencing that. And you cannot read enough about it in books or watch it in a video. You like have to immerse yourself in that to really understand that culture, and then be respectful and appreciative of that culture, right? Don't try to bring in your ideas. It's just really immerse yourself in it. So I think it would have to be something with travel.
I had one last question. What is some advice you would give to students who want to become future like educators or administrators within like any sort of district?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's one, if you're going to go through through college to get your degree, right, in education, of course, you're going to find mentors there. They're going to connect you with the school. But I think it's also lean in. I would tell you, come back to the school where you were a student, right, and give back. I had the privilege of being an associate principal at Long Middle School, and that's where I went to school as a student. And so being able to give back, because it's a different type of connection. And if you choose not to have your degree be education, just make sure you keep up that GPA, because you can come into alternative certification, but you have to have a certain GPA. And so making sure that you're keeping your GPA up if that's something you want to do. But I would say, if you can, and I think there's opportunities out there through Teach for America or different organizations, is before you go into your career, come back and teach, right, for a few years, because I think all of our students could benefit from being taught by students who grew up in the same type of environment as them. I think there's this connection, and if you think about the teachers maybe that you have the best connections with, thinking through their backgrounds and how much our students would benefit from that.
All right, well, that just about wraps up this show. We are very grateful for you coming and joining us here today. It was a great show. I enjoyed it a lot. I'm sure we all did. And that make sure to follow all our social medias down below, and we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview.
My radio station.
We hope you enjoyed the great content and great discussion, all from a student's perspective. Make sure to follow us on Twitter for the latest updates at KSBM_TVT or on Facebook at KSBM Radio.
Add them on Facebook.
Check them on Facebook.
Take care.